Welcome back to the table in our segment two, where we do our Bible study. And our teacher, Connie Stanfill, is with us back with lesson number 45 in the Gospel of Mark. And Connie, we are starting a new chapter today, aren't we?
We are. And so here in Mark 14, we're finding some more of that history of what's going on that last couple of days of Jesus' life. And so we are going to study a passage today, Mark 14, verses 1 to 11, we're going to have just such incredible contrast between religious leaders who are hostile to Jesus, want to kill him, then a woman, which we find out from the, actually we know from the Gospel of John, is Mary of the Mary, Martha, and Lazarus family. And then we're also going to have Judas going to the priests and the leaders to betray Jesus. And so we have an intimate follower of Jesus who so doesn't know who he is and is so looking to his own way of seeing and doing things that he rejects Jesus and in fact betrays him for money. And so what a contrast between a faithful follower and then people who hate and reject Jesus. I will read this in sections and we will talk about each of those three groups of people and then contrast them. So here we are, Mark 14 verses 1 to 2. It was now 2 days before the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and the chief priests and the scribes were seeking how to arrest him by stealth and kill him, for they said, "Not during the feast, lest there be an uproar from the people." All right, so we know Jesus is in Jerusalem. The reason he's there is for the Passover, and of course this is his timing, God's timing, because he's going to die at the Passover. But the chief priests and the leaders have a real problem with Jesus. They want to get rid of him, but they don't want it to happen right then during the festival because it would be, it would cause a problem. The Romans might get involved. It could just be a very messy situation because Jesus, up to now, has been very popular with the crowds of people. And so they're probably actually hoping to make some arrangements and then quietly, right after the festival, take care of Jesus. And so they're seeking and plotting how to arrest him by stealth and kill him. And so here we have the religious leaders of the country plotting murder. And just think about something gone wrong, if you really consider what they're doing. And so here we have this. We also have our first indication of, again, talking specifically about the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And as we go through chapter 14 here, we'll be talking more and more about that. But that Passover relates back to Exodus, when God's people were slaves in Egypt, and then through Moses' leadership, they are led out. And that Passover happens because the final plague against Egypt was a plague where the angel of the Lord killed the firstborn in Egypt. And what the Israelites needed to do was sacrifice a lamb, eat that lamb, spread the blood of the lamb across the top of the doorpost and on the sides of it, so that when the angel of death, the angel of the Lord, came through and killed all the firstborn, that angel would pass over the houses where the blood was spread. And even then, blood was what was protecting the people. And we're going to find that Jesus himself is going to be the Passover lamb, and his blood is what is going to have God's judgment pass over us. But more about that when we get further into John chapter 14. That Feast of Unleavened Bread then spoke to the 7 days after Passover, because what the children of Israel did when they left Egypt, it was in such haste that they were told to just take the bread along. They didn't have time to let it rise. And so for 7 days, the children of Israel remembered that entire deliverance of how God led them out of Egypt, and they ate unleavened bread for 7 days. All right, now we are going to look at Mark chapter 14, verses 3 to 9. And one thing I will tell you is that this segment of Mark right here is not in chronological order with everything else that's been we've been talking about lately. This happened a little bit earlier in the week because we know from the other Gospels that it happened on Friday, Saturday before, and it actually happened in Bethany. And from John's Gospel, we find that the woman who actually anoints Jesus here in this passage is Mary, of Mary and Martha and Lazarus. So I will read the passage, and then we'll talk about it. Verse 3, "And while he was at Bethany in the home of Simon the leper, as he was reclining at table, a woman came with an alabaster flask of ointment of pure nard, very costly, and she broke the flask and poured it over his head. There were some who said to themselves indignantly, "Why was the ointment wasted like that? For this ointment could have been sold for more than 300 denarii and given to the poor." And they scolded her. But Jesus said, "Leave her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. For you always have the poor with you, and whenever you want, you can do good to them, but you will not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for burial. And truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her." So we have an account of Jesus at a dinner a few days before this, and we find that a woman, we know from John's gospel, this is actually Mary, came with an alabaster flask, and that's a special kind of marble that held very costly, precious things. In that flask was ointment of pure nard, which is a very expensive perfume, which is made from a plant called spikenard, which came from India. And it was used for a perfume, and it was also used to anoint a dead body. Because the Jews did not embalm people, what they would do is they would dress and anoint a body and then bury someone the same day they died. And the perfumes and spices were to help decrease the odor of decay, which would happen with a body like that. But anyway, what this woman does, Mary does, is she breaks the flask and pours it over his head. And we also find that she puts it on his feet from the other Gospels. And then verse 4 says, "There were some who said to themselves indignantly, 'Why was the ointment wasted like that? This ointment could have been sold for more than 300 denarii and given to the poor.'" And so it cost almost a year's wages. It was very expensive. We find out from the other Gospels, it was actually Judas who was the leader in complaining about how much was spent on this perfume. And then the John's Gospel also clues us in to the fact that Judas, who was the keeper of the money bag, used to help himself to the money as he wanted. So we know that he's a thief, and we know that money talks to him, that that's more important to him than other things. And then it says they scolded her. In verse 6, Jesus says, "Leave her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has done a beautiful thing." Truly, the Greek means a noble, a good thing to me. And then verse 7, he says, "For you always have the poor with you, and whenever you want, you can do good to them, but you will not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for burial." And so we find out that Mary, the woman who in Luke's gospel sat at Jesus' feet, soaking in his teaching while Martha was busy running around preparing a meal, she loved Jesus, and she did what she did as an act of devotion, an act of sacrifice. She gave her best to him. I don't know if she knew all that was going to happen to him in the next few days, but she chose to show how much she loved him by this act. And truly, a faith that loves Jesus then does actions that please Jesus and ones that show our love for him. And she couldn't help herself, I think, from doing this. And Jesus commends her for it. And he says that wherever the gospel is preached, her action will be told. And so we have an example here of someone who loved Jesus with all of her heart, as best she could at that point. And we've seen evidence of this throughout Mark's gospel. It makes me think of Bartimaeus, who that blind beggar who, as soon as he was healed, follow Jesus. And we think about that Syrophoenician woman, the Gentile, who totally trusted Jesus and knew that he could do, all he had to do was say a word and her daughter would be healed of that demon. We think of that man who was possessed by a legion of demons, and all he wanted to do was be at Jesus' feet and follow him. And then when Jesus said, "No, you stay here and you tell others," he was faithful. He did that. And then even just thinking about that woman with the issue of blood, she knew if she just touched and got close to Jesus, she could be healed. And he tells her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well." And so we've seen examples of people throughout Mark's gospel, people who've come to understand in some sense who Jesus is. And so they just trust him and it changes them. So they act in ways that please him. That's, I think, a great lesson for all of us. And may we all actually come to be more like Mary and just wholeheartedly love Jesus and do our all for him. The next section of today's study is really a huge contrast, because we go from Mary, who was so devoted to Jesus, to also someone who knew him well but did not love him and trust him and act in his best interest. And so now I'm going to read Mark chapter 14, verses 10 and 11. And these are very sad verses. It says, "Then Judas Iscariot, who was one of the 12, went to the chief priests in order to betray him to them. And when they heard it, they were glad and promised to give him money, and he sought an opportunity to betray him." From John's gospel, we find out that Satan actually entered into Judas for a short time here and prompted him to go to the chief priests to betray Jesus. But this was something that was in Judas' heart. He had rejected who Jesus was. Somehow Jesus wasn't who he expected him to be. He wasn't getting the advantage or whatever he thought was going to happen to him as a follower of Jesus. He was disappointed in him. And we also find out that money still motivates him, because he's happy to receive money for this act of betrayal. And so he, with intent, went to the chief priests and said, "I know how I can lead you to Jesus. I can let you know of a way to take care of him without the crowds around." And of course, the chief priests and the religious leaders were extremely happy, because they probably never expected that one of Jesus' followers would do this. And so as we look at today again, we have such a contrast between devotion to Jesus and then people who reject Jesus. And as we consider what we've studied, may we also consider how our words and our actions might either show the world who Jesus is, or perhaps in some sense not show who he truly is. And may we grow in being truly followers of Jesus.
Amen, Connie. And you know, ladies, we're going to talk more about this, but I want to let you know that the notes for this lesson, if you want to go deeper, and we hope that you do, you can find those and download those right at our website, naomistable.com, along with just being able to listen again to this 10-minute segment. Those are recorded on separate podcasts for you to use, and you can even use those in your own Bible studies with women around your own kitchen table. We hope you take advantage of that. Nancy and I will be back to talk about this in just a moment.